Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Busk. Ready? Should be a fun day. The NBA trade deadline is now gone, and if you are a Utah Jazz fan, and maybe you were on the edge of your seat thinking you were going to get Mike Conley or maybe move on from Derek Favors or Ricky Rubio, breathe easy. The Jazz did not do anything today as far as official trades are concerned. The Jazz will be staying pat, and we will talk about that a little bit later on in the show and what it means for the Jazz specifically. But just because Utah didn't finalize any deal doesn't mean there were no trades. Let's dive into it today by starting with trades throughout the NBA, and we'll start with the Philadelphia 76ers. Number one overall pick, Markelle Fultz. Remember, this is a guy that Philadelphia really, really liked. They made a trade with the Boston Celtics to jump to that number one spot to draft Fultz. His time in Philly, it's over. Trade with the Orlando Magic. The Magic will get Markelle Fultz. Philadelphia gets Jonathan Simmons, a 2019 second round pick, a 2020 first round pick, which is top 20 protected, from Oklahoma City via Orlando. I think the Magic do great here. They're not giving up a whole lot to get Fultz. The Sixers, yeah, man, I don't know. When you take a look at what they gave up to get him, the flip side, you're not getting great return. Don't even pretend like it is. Fultz never really panned out in Philly. I think a change of scenery is going to be fantastic for him. To me, that was one of the bigger trades today. Marc Gasol is on his way out of Memphis. The Grizzlies deal Gasol to the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors counter what Philadelphia did, in my mind, by going out and getting Tobias Harris. Well, the Raptors, they get Marc Gasol. Memphis gets C.J. Miles, Jonas Valanciunas, former Utah Ute DeLon Wright, and a 2024 second-round pick. Give it an A to Toronto. Gasol, $25.6 million player option for next year. He's 35. Yeah, maybe that's a little bit scary, but they're all in right now. I mean, that's why they went out and got Kawhi Leonard. So I like this trade. I like it an awful lot. The Grizzlies, what they're really seeking here is cap flexibility. I like DeLon Wright. I think he can play at this level. And Jonas Valanciunas, I'm fine with that as well. Wright's 27 years old. I don't know that you can consider him a prospect anymore, but I think it's something, he's someone that they would actually consider bringing back next season. And like I said, having to eat C.J. Miles' salary next year, it's not great, but there's some usage for C.J. Miles on this team. I think the Grizzlies did okay in this deal. The Clippers, they trade away Avery Bradley. They get Jamichael Green and Garrett Temple. I think that the Clippers have done a lot of good things today, and we'll talk more about what they have accomplished here in just a bit. Let's take a look at some of the other deals. The Milwaukee Bucks, they were going all for it. They go out, they get Nikola Mirotic, and in exchange, send out Stanley Johnson, a second-round pick this season, which they got from Denver, their own second-round pick next year, Washington's second-round pick next year, and Washington's second-round pick in 2021. Also, Thon Maker was involved in this deal as well. So again, Milwaukee, they're pushing hard to win the Eastern Conference. Mirotic kind of gives them more of a diversified look. I think as far as an offensive attack goes, he can dribble. I think that he's going to work very well with Giannis. I like the move for Milwaukee. So again, there were some big deals today. For me, the winners, you know, it's hard to go against Toronto getting Marc Gasol, even if it is only a one-year stint. I think they do very well in that particular Field, and I like what Orlando did going out and getting Markelle Fultz. Anthony Davis stays put. We talked a lot about Anthony Davis over the last week. It was all for naught. He stays put in New Orleans. The Lakers did not make very many moves. They did acquire Mike Muscala today, trading Michael Beasley and Ivica Zubac. Zubac has played very well this season. The reason why LA needed to move on from him, he's a restricted free agent, second-round draft pick. His contract's not guaranteed next year. And really, the Lakers were not going to be able to bring him back. They weren't going to match any offer that Zubac gets this offseason. So to me, they clear up a roster spot by sending out Beasley and Zubac. Expect Carmelo Anthony to be a Laker, I think, relatively soon. So that's a quick look at the NBA trade deadline and how things went down. Again, a little bit later on in the show, we will talk about the Utah Jazz and only the Utah Jazz on what this means for them moving forward, how much cap space the Jazz will now have in the offseason. And once again, I'm blown away by the fact that Derek Favors is still a member of this team. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I think he has the most desirable contract for someone of his production. It's a bargain. And I thought for sure when he signed this past offseason, with a team option for next year, he would be moved at some point in time, but the Jazz could not. They couldn't find a suitor, and they couldn't get a deal done for Mike Conley because he stays in Memphis as well. Now, some sad news coming out of the national sports scene today. Frank Robinson, MVP, first ever African-American manager, has passed away at the age of 83. He was an outfielder and a first baseman. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1982. That was his first year of eligibility. A fearsome hitter, ranks 10th on the career home runs list with 586, won the Triple Crown with the Orioles in 1966, and then became the first African-American coach in Major League Baseball history in 1975 with the Cleveland Indians. Again, Frank Robinson has passed away at the age of 83. We'll end by taking a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight. We have, I believe, six games on tap. The Clippers will be on the road to take on the Indiana Pacers at 5. Minnesota travels to meet Orlando, and Atlanta will play host to the Toronto Raptors. 6 o'clock, nationally televised game on TNT. The Lakers are on the road to meet the Boston Celtics. Oklahoma City will play host to Memphis. Nightcap tonight on TV, TNT, San Antonio at Portland. Fun show lined up, a lot of basketball talk today. We're going to be joined by Coach Kyle Wilson of the Carbon Dinos in just a moment. We'll recap Carbon's setback on the road last night against Union. And then we'll be joined by Dan Clayton. He's an editor and columnist for Salt City Hoops, has covered the Utah Jazz for over 10 years. He'll join us to talk about the trade deadline that never was for the Jazz and what this means moving forward. That's all straight ahead on Drive Time Sports. It's a Thursday edition of the show right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM live from the Auto Farm Studios. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the high school basketball court where last night the Emory Spartan boys squad dipped to 5-6 in region play after suffering a 94-82 loss to the Grand Red Devils on the road in Moab. Emory trailed by as many as 16 in the first half, but battled back to tie it in the second. Emory failed to take the lead and was outscored by Grand 30-20 in the fourth quarter, suffering the loss. Despite the setback, Emory was led by junior Brax Jensen. He scored 19 points and knocked down 3 shots from beyond the arc. Emory also got a 15-point performance from senior Brody Tuttle and 14 points from Mason Famalawa off of the bench. Again, Emory is now 5-6 overall in region play. They will have an opportunity to close out the region portion of the schedule on a positive note Friday as they play host to the San Juan Broncos. Start time for that game is set for 7 p.m. Live coverage will begin on KOAL at 6:30. We move over to Carbon High School boys basketball, and last night the Dinos traveled on the road to Roosevelt, suffering a 60-53 loss to the Union Cougars, dipping to 4-7 in Region 14 play in the process. Carbon trailed by only 4 at the end of the first half and 2 going into the fourth quarter, but Union outscored Carbon 18-13 to close out the contest. The Dinos were led by Caleb Nelson. He scored 16 points and accumulated 7 rebounds. Colin Lewis chipped in with 15 points and 10 boards to record a double-double. Ty Anderson ended with 10, and Derek Hillam scored 9. The Dinos have one more region contest on the regular season slate. That'll be this Friday on the road against American Leadership Academy in Spanish Fork. Live coverage of the game will begin at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, followed by tip-off at 7 on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. We will recap tonight's game with head coach Kyle Wilson later today on KOL's Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. Tonight, the Emory Lady Spartans will wrap up the regular season as they travel on the road to meet the San Juan Broncos. Emory is currently 11-0 in Region 15 play, and they recently clinched the region championship. They're also 20-0 overall in the season, and they have won 35 consecutive games at the varsity level. San Juan, on the flip side, is 5-5 in division play. It'll mark the second and final meeting between the two teams this season. Emory won the first 79-43 back on January 17th. Start time for tonight's road contest is set for 6 p.m. We move over to swimming, and today both Carbon and Emory will travel to Brigham Young University in Provo as they participate in the 3A state championship meets. The two squads are coming off of a successful stint at the region championship tournaments just a couple of weeks ago. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will bring you the results from today's meet as soon as they become available. And we end by moving over to the junior college basketball scene. Tonight, the USU Eastern men and women squads will travel on the road to meet the College of Southern Idaho in Twin Falls. The men's basketball team is coming off of a 56-55 win over Snow College this past Saturday. USU Eastern also defeated CSI in the only other meeting this season, 76-75. That one was at the BDAC back on January 12th. Start time for tonight's game is set for 7:30 p.m. The women will take the court beforehand. Tip-off for that game is set for 5:30. The USU Eastern men's squad did receive a vote in the latest NJCAA rankings. A win today may mean a top 25 ranking for the basketball team. They will travel on the road to meet Salt Lake Community College this Saturday. The women will join. The women's contest is set for 3 p.m., and the men will take the court immediately after at 5. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner. Last night on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, the Carbon Dinos coming up short with a 60-53 loss to the Union Cougars. Carbon will now wrap up the regular season tomorrow. Road contest with American Leadership Academy in Spanish Fork. Tip-off for that game is set for 7 p.m. Live coverage will begin at 6:30. And, of course, you'll be able to listen to the live broadcast on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. We'll talk about last night's setback and what lies ahead for Carbon. We know who they will be matched up against in the opening round of the state tournament. And joining us to talk about that right now, we have Coach Kyle Wilson on the phone. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Coach, we'll start by talking about last night's game, road contest with the Union Cougars. I know the schedule this week is a little bit off. Originally scheduled for Tuesday, it gets moved to Wednesday. You guys battled tough with a pretty good Union basketball squad. It's kind of neck and neck throughout. Third quarter woes did not rear its ugly head in this game, but ultimately Union pulls away late, picks up a 7-point win.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously we knew we were getting into going over there playing those guys, and they're a good basketball team, and they work hard. You know, we executed our game plan for the most part pretty well. You know, last time when they were at our place, you know, offensive rebounds kicked our butt. The one Gilman kid, I think he had 17 points. I believe he had 9 offensive rebounds in the second half. I think 6 of them in the fourth quarter. You know, we took them to, I think that was the double overtime one, but, you know, and so yesterday, you know, we took him out of it. He had a total of, I think, 7 or 8 total rebounds, 1 offensive. You know, Colin Lewis did a fantastic job on him and did everything we asked him to do regarding that. You know, we out-rebounded them. You know, we worked our game plan. We just didn't shoot the ball very well yesterday. You know, going to their place on the road, you know, we got it. Sometimes you don't score the ball. So you need to make adjustments. You need to make sure you get more stops. You need to make sure you get into the free throw line a little more. You know, instead of shooting from the outside, I feel like we took a few too many outside shots. But, you know, I just got to, you know, myself as a coach, I got to make sure I make sure my guys understand what we're trying to accomplish. You know, like, you know, if we're not scoring from the outside, let's get it inside. You know, so I'll take a lot of the credit on you know, us not doing that. I got to have my guys better prepared for situations like that. You know, Derek Hill struggled yesterday, and I think it caught everybody off guard. But you know, he was working his tail off and just, you know, wasn't finding the net. You know, taking good shots and just not falling for him. So, you know, once again, that's on me. I got to make sure I put him in a better position to succeed, and try to keep his confidence up on both ends of the floor.
Well, Coach, now while Derek didn't have his typical contest, you and I were talking off of the air, and you'd mentioned Colin Lewis. I mean, he stuffed the stat sheet very easily. Could be the best all-around game he has ever had at the varsity level. I mean, 15 points, 10 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals. I mean, that's stuffing the stat sheet at a high level against a team like Union that you've already seen once. That's an impressive outing.
Yeah, you know, and Colin's capable of doing that, you know, on a nightly basis. You know, when we play, and that's what we want out of him. I mean, he was taking, especially early in the game, he was taking smart shots. You know, he was finding Caleb Nelson underneath the hoop for some easy buckets early in the game, and it was just working really well. And he kept that up for the most part. You know, you come to the fourth quarter, you're down, you kind of start forcing a few things, and I got to get them out of the habit of that. Just let's stay with our game plan and you know, just look for the best quality shot we can get. But no, you're right, Colin, that was the best all-around game Colin's played all year. You know, I told him that yesterday, and I told him I also expect him that out of him, you know, to, you know, our last region game tomorrow, and then, you know, going into the state tournament, you know, that's what I need. You know, another kid that stepped up was Caleb Nelson. I think he had 16. You know, I can't remember how many rebounds he had, but he was all over the court yesterday. He hit a couple threes. You know, finishing at the hoop, just battling, and he's a kid that I count on, that I can count on every night, just to bring everything he's got, and you know, just do whatever he has to do for the team. But you know, and those two stepped up. You know, Ty Anderson played well, and you know, we played hard. I'm not gonna take effort away from him. Just, you know, at points we struggled scoring.
Seems like it's one of those games, Coach, where maybe a change of venue would have benefited. Home contest, you guys probably win this game, even though Derek did not have his type of performance that he typically does. You and I have talked about the third quarter. You got that figured out. It seems to me like if you get that figured out at home, you guys would have probably 6 or maybe even 7 region wins.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if we could, you know, put a third quarter together, exactly. You know, yeah, we'd have a lot. I mean, yeah, the win-loss column would look a lot different. But, you know, it is what it is right now. And you know, we just got to try to, you know, make the changes and figure it out. And, you know, we're taking the steps there, but, you know, we're running out of time a little bit too. And I got some young guys stepping up and playing really well. And I think it's coming together, but it's just got to click. You know, it's got to click tomorrow, and then it's got to click all next week, you know, so we can get, you know, get that that first round. You know, go in and play our best basketball. So,
again, we're being joined right now by Coach Kyle Wilson of the Carmen Dino Boys Squad. Coach, as you mentioned, final region game tomorrow and making sure you get it right. Now, at this stage in the season, it's either you know it or you don't, right? I mean, we played a lot of basketball since November, and now it's crunch time.
Yeah, you know, and we've put a lot of work in. We've put a lot of time in to trying, you know, our scheme of things and what we're trying to do. And you know, we're not gonna change it. We can't just change things right now. You know, we spent a lot of time doing what we're trying to do, and I think if we can, you know, everybody can buy into it for, you know, that one game. I mean, you know, and I, you know, obviously I want to win tomorrow, and that's what, you know, practice today. We're focusing on winning tomorrow, and you know, not even worry about next week. But you know, next week we all gotta buy into it for one game. You know, it's a survive and advance right now. Come next week, so. You know, I think we got Morgan 8:30 in the morning on Saturday. So, you know, after tomorrow, that's what my weekend is. That's what my next week is. And, you know, I teach, but there probably might not be a lot of teaching going on. I got a game plan for that for a week, but no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, you know, we gotta buy in and we gotta play really good basketball come next Saturday.
Coach, you talked about Morgan. you have over a week to prepare for them, knowing that that's who you're going to play right off of the bat. I personally think that's an advantage for the team that's the lower seed. I mean, Morgan is the number one spot out of the out of Region 13. We know that. We're locked in at the number five spot in Region 14. To me, that's a benefit for you guys. I mean, you literally have a week and a half to create a game plan against Morgan.
Yeah, you know, and they're a successful basketball team. They're a good basketball team. You know, I think they're undefeated in their region. You know, they're a good basketball team, and you know, coming into that game, you know, I feel like a lot of pressure, you know, was on that top seed, you know, playing a five seed out of you know, our region, but you know, sometimes they underestimate a little bit too. You know, when I have a Derek Hillam, you know, and I have a Colin Lewis and a Caleb Nelson and a Ty Anderson and you know, just those. You know, and I can't name everybody. We'll be here for a long time, but you know, when I have those guys, we get underestimated a little bit. But it just takes one game. You know, it takes one game, and you know, everybody could be looking at things differently. So it's, you know, I'm excited to get to work, and you know, after tomorrow, I got to focus on tomorrow first. But after that, I'm excited to get game planning, get focused on that, and just see exactly what we're made of and what we can do.
Well, let's talk about tomorrow's game, American Leadership Academy. Last time American Leadership and Carbon met, it was in Price. You guys picked up a methodical win, Coach. You pulled away to 3 points, I believe, is what it was at the end of the first quarter. Kind of expanded on that lead in the second. Blew it open in the third quarter. It was a methodical win. They showed a lot of parity offensively, but what do you remember most about ALA?
You know, they have a couple guys. You know, they have one guy on their team that can score, is a good basketball player. But one thing is, they're not going to stop. You know, they didn't give up. They didn't just roll over and die. You know, they had some struggles, but you know what team doesn't at certain times. So, you know, they're going to give it everything they got. And honestly, you know, they're tied with Mazer Prep at one win apiece in region. So they're kind of playing for their survival. You know, if they win and Mazer loses, I think Mazer has Providence Hall. So, you know, that's going to be a tough matchup for Mazer. But, you know, whichever team, you know, wins, you know, if one team wins, one team doesn't, you know, that the winning team's in. You know, if they both lose, they got to have a playoff game. But, yeah, so both of them are kind of playing for their lives right now. And I got to make sure my guys know that they're going to get they're going to get punched. You know, it's not just going to be we're going to go in and knock them out in the first round, you know, type fight. And you know, we're going to go in and we're going to take some in the jaw. You know, we're going to take some to the body. We're going to take some to the face. And we just got to, you know, keep our cool and make sure we just punch back. So, you know, I expect a pretty hard fought game tomorrow. And you know, I'm excited to see how my team will respond.
Last time out, Derek had 30-15 against this ALA team. What worked for Derek in that outing?
You Derek Hillam.
That simple.
It really sometimes it is. It doesn't matter what team he plays against. When he's playing, you know, the game that he's capable of playing, he can do that on a nightly basis. You know, like we were talking last night, he struggled, but what good player doesn't struggle once in a while? He'll bounce back, and I'm completely confident that he'll bounce back, and he'll be our leader again tomorrow, and in every aspect. And you know, he's Derek Hillam. You know, I've made the argument he's the best player in 3A, and I'm sure a few people will argue with that with me, but he can guard your best player and score 30 for me. So not many can do that and grab, you know, 15 rebounds in the same game. So he'll beat Derek tomorrow, and I think, you know, that'll obviously help us, and I think that'll give him a boost of confidence. But you know, he'll be back, and you know, I'll try to do my best to put him in every position that he can be in to be successful. So,
Coach, we'll end with this. I know one thing that's even more important than peaking at the right time is being healthy at the right time, and this is a team that had injury problems throughout the season. For the most part, are you guys healthy right now?
Yeah, we are. You know, I mean, we got the same thing everybody else does. We got the bumps and bruises just from a, you know, a long season. You know, kids, you know, high school kids playing, you know, 20, 22 games. You know, they're going to get bumps and bruises. They're going to get tired. They're going to get worn out. You know, especially guys that play high volume minutes. You when I got a few of them, you know, they, and I try to do my best at, you know, getting them rest and making sure they're as, you know, as close to 100% as they could possibly be. But, you know, for the most part, we're healthy and we're, you know, we're eager to keep our season going.
Well, Coach, it is always a pleasure to get you on there and talk a little bit about the basketball program. Best of luck tomorrow. Close out the regular season on a positive note, and we'll talk to you next week in preparation for Morgan.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Again, that's Coach Kyle Wilson of the Carbon Dino basketball squad. Do not forget, Carbon will return to the court tomorrow to take on American Leadership, and then next Saturday they will take on Morgan. Early start time, 8 o'clock in the morning, and we'll have that live coverage for you on KRPX. We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll talk NBA basketball. Dan Clayton of SaltCityHoops.com will join us. We'll recap why the Jazz stayed pat at the trade deadline and what that means moving forward. That's coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes a strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. The NBA trade deadline, it has come. Now it is gone, and the Utah Jazz, for the most part, staying pat. I mean, it was a very uneventful day for the Utah Jazz. We are going to talk about the Jazz right now with Dan Clayton. He takes out the time to join us from time to time, editor and columnist with SaltCityHoops.com. Dan, it's been far too long, but it is a pleasure to get you back on today. Thank you.
Always fun to join you, Jordan.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk Utah Jazz basketball with you. I know the trade deadline's an exciting time in the NBA, but if you're a Jazz fan, you were probably more entertained by Ricky Rubio than anything else today.
Ricky was having fun out there on Twitter, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He was aware that he was central to some of the rumors that the Jazz were involved in, and so he was kind of poking fun at that on social media, making jokes about, hey, my code to get into the practice facility on the keypad still works, and just stuff like that. He's a fun guy. He is a Jazz guy. You know, obviously Utah might have used him today in a deal to get better, but the fact that he's still with the Jazz, it's hard to be too disappointed about that, because he's just a good guy to have around that basketball team.
Now, with that being said, and I agree with you 100%, Ricky Rubio, Derek Favors, that was a rumored package to Memphis, maybe for Mike Conley. I know there were a lot of other rumors out there, if you want to throw Dante Exum into the conversation as well. Dan, are you surprised that the Jazz did nothing today?
A little bit, but when we say did nothing, like, I want to be clear, I think the Jazz were very aggressive today and this week. I think they had offers in for multiple players. Conley was one of them. By the way, I have gotten a sense, and, you know, some of this is piecing together things from Tony Jones reporting on The Athletic and from some other sources. I've pieced together, I don't believe the package was ever Rubio and Favors and Exum. I think the package was Rubio and expiring salary that would match Conley's salary. I believe that the Memphis Grizzlies asked for Exum and the Jazz said no. I think that the Grizzlies asked for more draft picks. Because the Jazz were willing to include their 2019 first-round pick. Memphis kept asking for more first-round picks, and I believe the Jazz said no to that. So, there's a version of this deal that the Jazz could have gotten done if they were willing to sort of bid against themselves. But the reality is, they were, if you look at what Detroit was offering, you know, a package that was built around a bad contract in Reggie Jackson and a single first round pick. If you look around at what was out there, the Jazz had the best offer. The Jazz were the best offer on the table. There's no reason for Utah to keep throwing assets on top of the best package that Memphis had. At some point, you just have to, you know, the seller just has to decide if they're selling. And in this case, it sounds like Memphis was kind of in a game of chicken, trying to see if they could get a little bit more out of Utah. And ultimately, Dennis Lindsay decided he wasn't going to be fleeced when he knew he was already the best package sitting there. So, you know, at a level, good on him for not getting fleeced. At another level, it would have been nice to have Mike Conley join his ball club, but the Jazz decided to keep their assets intact and move into the summer.
You know, I do believe that as we get deeper into this Mike Conley contract, obviously it's going to be easier and easier to move, and maybe this is where Memphis is coming off of. I don't know. I mean, if you take a look at Marc Gasol, that's a very valuable contract based on the fact that you got a $25.5 million option next season. It's a player option. They move Gasol. I don't believe that Gasol would decline that $25.9 million option. Conley, on the flip side, next year, he's even that much more desirable if he's still producing at a somewhat similar level, Dan.
Well, he is, but here's the thing with Conley. He has a $32.5 million on the books next year. He has $34.5 million the year after that, which is now, you know, it's going to be fully guaranteed because he's going to hit a games played trigger this year, which determines how much of that salary is guaranteed. You know, plus he has a third of this season remaining. So you're talking about basically $80 million that's still owed to a player who is really good. I mean, he's very good. He's a top 6, 7, 8 point guard in the NBA. He's also 31. He's also had injuries in the past that make you wonder how he's going to age and how his game is going to translate into his mid-30s. So, you know, there's a version of this deal, had it gone down, there's a version of this deal that would have worked out really nicely for the Jazz, where they get sort of that third impact player to put next to Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. There's also a version of this trade, and I was kind of worried about this from the first moment I heard Conley's name mentioned. You know, the Jazz got George Hill at a similar stage in Hill's career, right? Just into his early 30s, had, you know, coming off a few big serious injuries. And the Jazz were excited to have him, and rightfully so, because he was a big name and a great on-paper fit for what the Jazz were doing at the time. But then, as it turns out, the Jazz got him just in time for him to start his decline. And, you know, today George Hill is a fraction of the player he was just before that trade. And so, you know, I think that there's a little bit of that with Mike, where you're saying, okay, I think the Jazz wanted him. I think they also didn't want to give too much for him on the chance that maybe a couple of years from now he's not quite the same player he is today. And I think that that's the consideration that makes you look at $80 million still owed and be just a you know, slightly nervous about how many assets you're going to throw in to get that deal done.
Again, we're being joined right now by Dan Clayton, editor and columnist for the for SaltCityHoops.com, as we talk the Utah Jazz and the trade deadline. Dan, it seems like it never fails. This time every year, I'm talking about the possibility of Derek Favors being moved. Maybe I'm overstating this, but to me, every year, I look at the Favors deal and I think to myself, this has to be one of the more valuable contracts, one of the more desirable contracts for teams to look at, you know, making a move with. Am I wrong in thinking that? Because I've said this for years, yet Derek Favors' career with the Utah Jazz has nine lives, I guess, because I'm shocked that he is still a member of the still a member of the Utah Jazz in 2019.
Yeah, coming up on 8 years, the 8 year anniversary of the trade that brought him to Utah from New Jersey. No, you're not wrong. I mean, it's kind of like, look, when he signed that deal last season, a $16.9 million contract with a second year at the same amount but fully non guaranteed. That deal, everything about that deal, the way it was structured, the second year non-guaranteed, everything about that deal said Derek Favors is a trade asset. Derek Favors is a chip that we're going to use in conversations to potentially bring back big salary, because he, with that contract structure, he appeals to teams who want some center help over the kind of medium term, but he also appeals to teams that want basically an expiring salary. You could make him an expiring salary by just not picking up that second year. So, you know, it really seems to me that's one of the reasons why going into this trade deadline, I really thought it was more likely than not that the Jazz would do something or other. Not that, you know, you can't, the reality is you can't go make a team trade you an impact player, right? Like, that's tougher than fans like to pretend it is, because we all, you know, get on 2K and we make our fake trades and we go play on the trade machine and make our fake trades. It's not that easy. It's not any easier than if I were to walk into your house, Jordan, hand you $500 and say, all right, I own your TV now. I just bought your TV. Like, we don't get to, as humans, make those decisions unilaterally. But Favors, man, the contract he agreed to really seemed to be a contract that screamed trade chip, and yet here he is, you know, about to be an 8 year Jazz man, still the longest tenure Jazz man, and with the club at least through the end of this season.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of shocking. Again, for years, we've been talking about Derek Favors being moved at the deadline. Let's talk about Dante Exum, a name that I think is going to be somewhat similar, especially the deeper we get into the Dante Exum deal, because you take a look at what he's making this season, 10.6, 10.6 next year, 10.6 the year after that. I think this may be a more common occurring name to pop up around the trade deadline and maybe even the offseason moving forward, Dan.
Yeah, I agree. I will just, as a clarifying point, because I do think this is important in terms of how we think about Exum's value and his contract, the reality is it's a $9.1 million contract in each of the 3 years with incentives on top that can take it up to about $11 million. So, that's important because the incentives are for things like about $500,000 a year is for things like participating in the Jazz's summer development programs. Like, that's kind of free money if Exum does what he's supposed to do. But the other $1.4 million in that contract is based on stuff like games played, because obviously, availability has been an issue for Dante, and I don't blame him for that. He's had three separate acute random traumas, and those aren't, that's not a guy's fault when his ankle goes 90 degrees sideways. But there's other stuff in there like, incentives for being an all-defensive first or second team player, an incentive in there for having a defensive rating of under 100 points per opponent possessions when he's on the floor. Stuff like that that basically means if he's making the full value of that contract, it's because he's a really good player. If he's all defensive first or second team, if he's one of the 10 best defenders in the NBA, the Jazz will gladly pay him $11 million a year. So I think his contract, because of that, is really favorable. It's a contract that basically starts at sort of the mid-level contract tier, the mid-level exception. And if it goes higher, it's because he's doing things and being a basketball asset and being a player that's worth those things. So he'll be an asset. But again, like I said with the Conley thing, the Jazz have had opportunities to put Exum in deals and they keep saying no. Obviously, there are certain types of deals for which they'd have to consider putting Exum in a trade package. But I think Dennis Lindsay really values Exum and what he could mean to the future of the club.
Dan, before I let you go, you and I did have a conversation off of the air about what this means moving into the offseason for the Jazz. I want you to go ahead and break that down for the listeners. How much money the Jazz may actually have this offseason now that we know this is the roster that's set throughout the remainder of the year, and it's a little north of $40 million if they play their cards the right way. They want to take it that direction.
Yeah, exactly. So the Jazz are going to have some options because they have a few pending free agents whose rights they can either hold on to if they want to re-sign the likes of Ricky Rubio, Thabo Sefolosha, and Epe Udoh, and they have non-guaranteed contracts like Derek Favors, Royce O'Neal, George Niang, and Kyle Korver is only partially guaranteed. So basically, if they wanted to just wipe it clean and create as much cap space as they could let all of those guys walk, and they'd be sitting about $42 million under the salary cap. That's $42 million they could use to sign a player, to absorb a player in a summer trade. They could go into the season with that cap space and look for opportunities over the course of the season to absorb players or sign somebody. So, that represents potentially an opportunity to make the roster better that they wouldn't have had they signed Conley, because Conley would have basically occupied that whole slot and really made it so that the Jazz's core for the foreseeable future was Mitchell, Conley, and Gobert. So, we'll see what that means. Cap flexibility is only valuable to the degree that they're able to do something with it. But the Jazz certainly are going to enter this offseason with a few different ways that they can improve the roster. And we'll see where they go from there.
Dan Clayton, again, joining us to talk Utah Jazz and the trade deadline that never was. Dan, before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work. And, of course, you on Twitter as well.
Yeah, so saltcityhoops.com is the site that I manage and write at. It's a great site with a lot of unique perspectives and voices coming from great writers on our team. And then I'm on Twitter at DanClate0N. So it's Dan Clayton with a zero for the O.
Dan, I always look forward to talking Utah Jazz basketball with you. Again, thank you very much for the time.
Yep, fun chatting.
Definitely. Again, that's Dan Clayton of saltcityhoops.com, talking Utah Jazz basketball. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this Thursday edition of the show when we return live from the Auto Forum studios here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM KOAL.
Back to close out this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Might as well finish out talking NBA trade deadline, everything that went down over the last, 24 hours or so. Excellent segment just a moment ago with Dan Clayton. We'll bring in Travis Anderson now to close out today's show. Travis, outside of the trade deadline, the New York Knicks, they're making some moves as well. Enes Kanter has been released. He is now free to go wherever he would like. Wesley Matthews also bought out. Wes Matthews is more than likely going to sign with the Indiana Pacers. And so some moves, some salary cap moves. Look, I'll tell you, if I'm a contender, I'm looking hard at Enes Kanter.
Yeah, I would too. Guy can play, can rebound, can give you some defense, and he can score a little bit.
23 starts this season, 14 points, 10 boards, a double-double guy. I'm all for it. Former Jazz men, though. We're talking about Kanter, and we're also talking about Wes Matthews. But I guess we could end by talking about the Lakers and the fact that they did not get Anthony Davis. And now there's rumblings. And look, Twitter is a beautiful thing at times. But around the trade deadline, everybody wants to be the first to get a scoop. Okay, everybody wants to be the first to break some news. And so take this with a grain of salt. But there is a report out there that says New Orleans was doing everything that they possibly could to basically mess with the chemistry in L.A. They had no intention on ever trading Anthony Davis. They wanted trade offers floated out there so it would disrupt the chemistry within the team. Almost as
they wanted to embarrass the Lakers.
Because Anthony Davis wanted to go there, and they view there's tampering with Clutch Sports, everything else all the way around. You know the ties. Do you buy that?
I can buy that maybe that did happen, yes. That New Orleans felt like, with the whole tampering thing, that they were going to try to embarrass the Lakers and float ideas out there.
I don't think so. Convince me. Why?
I think that's just the way that the Pelicans organization is ran by guys that are in the NFL. One of the GMs in the NFL is actually one of the GMs now, helping with the Pelicans. I just think the Pelicans felt like the Lakers kind of embarrassed them with some, tampering with, trying to sway Anthony Davis and, put him in L.A. So I think maybe the Pelicans were just kind of, we'll mess with the Lakers.
I think anyone who buys that theory gives Dell Demps way too much credit.
He doesn't seem like a bright guy.
You nailed it right. You said it just a moment ago. Football minds trying to control a basketball
franchise.
There's
too many minds with the Pelicans.
I don't think that this is something. For one, I think that social media and a lot of the reporters that were seeking information, there were reports that Adrian Wojnarowski and Shams were getting upset at the Lakers organization for not leaking them information. So then they started trying to
float the worst trades out
on purpose, right? So again, this is one of the bad things about Twitter. And it's one of the bad things about everybody wanting to be first to a scoop. Is it wise for the Pelicans to wait until the end of the season to deal Anthony Davis? Yes. There is absolutely no question they are wise to wait until the offseason. Now, I know you're a Laker guy, and you probably don't want to hear that, but let's just be realistic here. The Celtics can't make an offer for Davis. They can't.
No, they have to wait till the summer, and Danny Ainge has bamboozled teams before, so maybe the Pelicans are like, oh, we're going to listen to Danny Ainge, and Danny Ainge is going to try to, rip them off.
Well, I think you're foolish to not listen to Danny Ainge, though. I mean, because the Celtics do have some assets. And look, just because Anthony Davis said, I don't want to play for the Pelicans anymore, does not mean you have to trade this guy before the deadline. I think that it was strategically placed. It was strategically timed. Okay, I'm going to demand this about a week and a half before the deadline. I'll make the situation look as poor as possible. They will trade me before the deadline, and I can kind of pick my spot. Kudos to the Pelicans for not bending. Okay, because if I'm looking to trade a franchise corner piece, and I believe Anthony Davis to be one of the top two players in the world right now. I do. I think he's that good.
He's top 10 in every category.
I think he is one of the top two players in the world today. And I don't think we know enough about Anthony Davis because of the market that he plays in. And I think the reason that Anthony Davis does not get the individual accolades is because of where he plays. Okay, so if I'm with I don't want to call him a small market team, but if I'm with a lesser successful squad and I have a cornerstone piece, I have one of the top two or top three players in the world, I want as many teams at my negotiating table as possible. Okay, and so to say that the Pelicans purposely tried to rob the Lakers, To me, that's wrong because you want the Lakers involved in the conversation this summer as well.
It antes up other teams.
Well, it does. You want the Lakers bidding against the Celtics. You want the Knicks bidding against the Lakers and the Celtics. And so for as upset as people are at the New Orleans Pelicans,
they don't have to trade him until next February.
Well, you don't have to, and yeah. I think you're crazy to think that Anthony Davis was going to strong-arm his way to getting out. Now, I don't believe that the Pelicans are going to get a better offer. I don't. And if the Lakers really were offering Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart,
Kuzma, two first rounds.
If that's really what the Lakers were offering, I think you really have to consider that. But at the same time, you got an idea of what Boston, you had to have gotten an idea. Dill Demps had to have gotten an idea of what Danny Ainge will offer this offseason. And if you seek Jason Tatum, and that's what you want, that's the piece that you want. For one, I don't think Tatum's any better than Brandon Ingram.
They're basically the same player.
I think he is better than Kyle Kuzma. I think Kuzma's a little bit overrated. I think Lonzo Ball is going to be a bona fide all-star, and I will stick by that. I claim that since his days at
UCLA.
I'm
off the Lonzo train.
I'm not. I've watched too much Lonzo Ball basketball. This guy can play in every facet of the game. If you think that Lonzo is going to average 25 points a game, he's not your guy. He is going to stuff the stat sheet. And Travis, I will bet you right now he's an all-star at some point in time in his career. He will be an all-star in this league.
All right,
league.
I'll take that bet.
He will be an all-star in this league.
Because he's not going to be a Laker much longer, I don't think. To him, for him to make an all-star team, it has to be off the Lakers.
Maybe. I mean, he's going to shot wherever he goes, his game is transferable wherever he goes.
He's got to shoot the ball better. He cannot shoot. He's below 40% from the free throw line, under 30% from the three-point line.
Yeah, but if you're averaging 12, 10, and 8, that's an all-star numbers.
What is he now, 9, 7, and 7?
And again, he's been plagued by injuries. The Lakers have been in flux. This guy's the real deal. I don't know that the Celtics can offer anything better than that. But again, if what you seek is Jason Tatum, I tip my hat to you, Dell Demps. You turned down one hell of a deal. Congratulations.
Jason Tatum and what, Jalen Brown?
Maybe. I'm just saying that I don't blame the Pelicans for not bending to Anthony Davis.
The Pelicans don't have to make the move. They don't have until next February.
We are out of time on this edition of the show. I want to thank Dan Clayton for taking out the time to break down the Utah Jazz and their day or lack thereof. And obviously Coach Kyle Wilson for joining us on the show as well. Have a terrific day. We'll be back to wrap up another week of Drive Time Sports tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We are out.